This is East End Inc. Tonight we present poets Grace Shulman and Jill Bielaski, recorded by Sag Harbor's Canio's Books. The poets read their work and discussed each other's work in the complete recording, which is available at eastendinc.blogspot.com. Grace Shulman started by reading a poem by Emily Dickinson, and she read from her latest collection, The Marble Bed.
And I'm very happy to be reading with Jill Bielaski, who I so admire. And to be reading a poem by Emily Dickinson. I think the poem speaks of the intensity required of both writer and reader. It is about creativity, and it is so intense that it comes off the page. When you read it, it just comes off the page. Dare you see a soul at the white heat? Then crouch within the door. Red is the fire's common tint, but when the vivid ore has vanquished flame's conditions, it quivers from the forge without a color, but the light of unanointed blaze. Least village boasts its blacksmith, whose anvil's even ring stands symbol for the finer forge that soundless tugs within. Refining these impatient ores with hammers and with blaze, until the designated light repudiate the forge. So those are the hammers and the blaze of poetry that call upon the light that repudiates the forge. And I'll be reading from Alive and Well Tomb Sculptures in the Staglieno Cemetery in Genoa, Italy. And the first of this series is Angel. These pictures appear in the book. I took the photos myself, and they appear in the book, so I will read the poem that goes with them. Angel. So this is death, lifelike in marble and unconsoling on a merchant's tomb. No man with a scythe, no man at all, but her. Slim-hipped in an airy gown, nipped at the waist. On the high breast, one hand rests, the slender fingers lip, waiting to beckon or direct. Come hither, lips, barbed wings. The eyes translucent, clear lakes you want to fathom. But the gaze says, I don't want to be known or understood. Angel of cold passion, angel of sex and death, essential answers hidden in one vamp. When I pass by, she turns to follow. Death, you terrify, just as you lure me with a knowing glance. I know her by the pleated satin dress, hair in a bun. The hesitation as she lifts the sheet, letting air in, astonished, peering into darkness. What will she find there at her husband's body, suddenly altered? Questions run through her. Dare she kiss the lips now growing colder? Can he hear her? Leaning awkwardly, loath to leave him, venturing a touch, she asks now, why him? In unending silence, she clings to precise details for an answer. Side glancing at the unmade bed, the high pile of cushions falling from their place. I know her by my husband's silver watch that hasn't stopped, the still warm belly, the pearl pajama button on the terrace. This next poem is Dreamer. In Italy, the statues in churches and in cemeteries are really quite sexy. Sex is okay in a religious sense, but this lady is holding poppies in her hand. That's not so good. So the authorities didn't like that too well. Dreamer. Clerics opposed her installation here, so close to rosaries, hands clasped in prayer. Officials said, a travesty of holiness, pagan, impious. Other slurs unclear. What was it? Not the lips about to part, the mouth to speak, the tousled hair, the robe that slides down a bare shoulder, curvy hips. Those were the sculptor's art. Nor was it her calm perch, dreaming, not dead. The dream, though. Those three ovals in her hand, seemingly blossoms, are poppy pods formed after flowering, from whose sticky substance opium is drawn. Demeter, in grief over her daughter's fate, would sip the stuff to soothe her loss. At the Stagino, sexy is fine, is life. Addiction, no. Maria Francesca. Now here is a really sexy one. Maria Francesca, eyes shut, as in elation more than death. The legs straining to spring from their marble bed. A sheep slipped to reveal the nude young breasts. Spool waist. Not the shattered body found in a car crash, fingers severed and flung. This likeness is perfect, shaped from a photograph. Notice the glow, the urge to speak, to laugh. Unlike some broken statues hinting at arms and phalluses, she gleams in all her parts. Alone, but not alone. Her man in marble bends to kiss her and clutch her thigh. Not in lust, but in finality. I know the scene, your body fixed, but yearning to move again. I'm moving now in scattered pieces over miles and time, free neither to finish the task of life nor to abandon it. Struggle. If these stones were flesh, you'd hear their cries. Death, blank-faced and stiff. And a lithe woman who won't be taken by those tigery claws without a kick, a blow, a fierce objection. She bends, covered waist down in see-through tulle, actually marble, carved to look ethereal, with the same mallet, calipers, and chisel the sculptor used to shape rock into muscle. Waist up exposed, but raging, unafraid. The work unfinished, dinners to order, dresses to try on, letters to write. When that last night you called for slacks and blazer from your sick bed, I watched the pull away, the savage, sun-driven, though futile, fight. Woman in sunlight. Carved in marble, white, now gone to grime. Mottled, soot blotched, smeared with blurred letters. A lithe woman reclines in a gauzy nightdress, curved from substantial hip to supple ankles. But for the cross she holds, I'd say in languor, stare at her, stare until you see lean hands open to grasp at air, feet kick to dance. Silk hair unfold like a billowing scarf. and linger for the long intake of breath. I want to move inside the blackened stone and find a spark that flares up into blaze and flashes like sunbeams, to dazzle with tales of what it could be like to walk out of my weathered body, clean, alive. This is my pandemic poem. It's called Gone. Washington Square, 2020. From my window, I see the world without us in it. A vacant park, a silver maple sheltering no reader, a cherry tree dressed like a bride betrayed, her wedding canceled, a dogwood tree whose whites will fall without regretful eyes. No baby strollers, no candy wrappers stuffed in bins, just a sign, no bicycles, and memories of skateboard pirouettes. Around us, death, the numbers spin the mind, fever dreams, the last breath held alone. I hadn't known death had undone so many. This park reminds us it was once a field for the unclaimed dead of galloping yellow fever. Construction workers dug up skeletons that had lain for years beneath our footsteps. Death in the hanging elm, a rooted gallows. Now the clear air, pollution-free, is poison for walkers, while trees stand stern, immune. Sad paradox. For comfort, I recall, Camille Pissarro would have lingered here. He painted Paris gardens from a window, having left his island's sprawling shores for tighter scenes. He gazed at people, matchsticks from above, in ones and twos. Below, the park's unlitted paths are mute. But wait, just now a mournful, prayerful sax, unseen from somewhere, unlooses notes, calls me to the window, and I hear the sounds I can't imagine being without.
This is East End Inc. We heard poet Grace Shulman reading from her latest collection, The Marble Bed. Next, here is Jill Bielowski reading from her poetry collection, Asylum.
I too wanted to begin with a nod to Emily Dickinson, and the poem that I chose of Emily Dickinson's to read is one of my favorites, After Great Pain, a Formal Feeling Comes. And it's also a nod to Grace's final poem in her book. It's a 10-part poem sequence called The Letting Go. So, after great pain, a formal feeling comes. The nerves sit ceremonious like tombs. The stiff heart questions, was it he that bore, and yesterday or centuries before? The feet mechanical go round, a wooden way of ground or air or aught, regardless grown, a quartz contentment like a stone. This is the hour of lead, remembered if outlived, as freezing persons recollect the snow, first chill, then stupor, then the letting go. My book, Asylum, is a book-length sequence in 103 lyric sections. I wanted to just say that it's meant to be read almost as if you would read a novel from beginning to end. And its primary subjects have to do with the relationship, I think, between the lyric poem and the cultural engagement. Trauma, environmental degradation of both nature and the urban world. And it also circles the personal and collective peril that we are living in. And so I'm going to read a sequence that I put together that was published in Granta. And so it's a sequence of 14 of the numbered sections that move throughout the book length poem. And I call this sequence Thrive, a lyric sequence. Together we circled the rings. A boy, he was still learning, and we moved slowly, picking up rhythm as we traveled. We would see it all, digging our blades to find traction, balance, to free the mind of doubt. Falling, occasionally bumping up against the outer edge. It would take years if we were lucky, stumbling in the face of reason. O muses, O geniuses of art, O memory, our blades crushing the ice. I knew by then that anything was possible. Once we witnessed a child's cheek nearly cut out from another skater's blade during a fall as he swerved in and out of the skaters, the triple axle of envy, gluttony, and pride igniting their hearts. Always someone who wanted to outdo another. We had to witness all of it because it had already happened. I had to be vigilant, cautious. Sometimes I held his hand tight because I knew. We kept our heads down. We were entranced, focused. Sometimes we could not see anything before us. That's what it required. One year I had forgotten the first leaves of spring. I had forgotten all the years of toil. I looked up and the trees had flowered. All it took was waiting out the bleak winter, the hemisphere of darkness. The color was lime green. I wanted to tell her, this is what it's like. Like just awakening, drenched, they persist. Ghosts in our poems, ghosts in our imagination, ghosts in our waking hours, ghosts who elude philosophers, poets, scientists, psychiatrists, therapists, and doctors, ghosts who perpetuate, who guileless will not keep quiet, who preside over the populace and unknowingly rob the living, ghosts who made their own house be their gallows, Dante says, will never rest. Under microscope magnifying glass, using magnets and electricity, pin and tuning fork, lumbar punctured, photographed, sketched, hypnotized, documented, compared, analyzed, tortured, starved, etherealized, objectified, concretized, held prisoner by the perpetrators of a science, by the history of an era, by the myth of the unsolvable math of the mercurial mind. Daffodils, survivors of the cruelest month, tossing their heads in sprightly dance from the ground arise. Beautiful long spines and yellow crowns, tulips, plas flower, hues fancied a fox, too excitable, too red. What we thought would thrive, we found a family of fragile evergreens we had planted one year, bottom needles eaten out by starving deer. One we had to tie to a stake to keep steady and alive. Like the snap of a branch, like the terror of the wind, like roots dug up, like worms in the undergrowth, like the rat on the pavement smashed by the wheels of a car into an inconceivable pancake, like the inexplicable act of making a noose, hanging it from the ceiling and tightening it around the neck, like the argument in a forest, like a person who knows things, a person who can't forget, a person who probes, persists, and is unkind, like the mind hating itself, like the wind giving in to logic, like thought murdering the body, like the night when the resilience of lavender, woody, spiky, tucked in the corner where deck meets earth, gave up and failed to thrive. Because it was Christmas and I was home with my fiancé, because her blue eyes burned with the brightness of knowing and barely a fleck of gloom, because she was young and brave and still wore cheap and sexy dresses in which only she made elegant, and though she sometimes came home intoxicated and vomited from drink and wept alone, suffering from the human syndrome of need, want, and abandon, she still slept in a Bugs Bunny sweatshirt, made us all scrambled eggs, nursed her beloved cat, gossiped with girlfriends on her phone, and slept stone cold into the morning like Sleeping Beauty awaiting a kiss in a room under a vaulted ceiling of a synagogue of the holy and depraved, where I too once slept in the cradle of despair and rage. Because gods are threatening to tear down branches, uproot trees, because there is no reprimand, recourse, no release, rain unleashes in downpours, wind casting for answers for crimes committed, souls humiliated, denied passage, denied rest. There is no end to the flooding, no end of grief. In downpours, rain is unleashed. Metamorphosized into trees that for eternity bleed, if cut or pruned or preyed upon, forever cast into hell's seventh circle, the lip above the chasm of pain which holds the din of infinite grief, unable to settle neither in heaven nor the underworld, the self-slaughtered. Hinduism considered it soul murder, Muslims hellfire, and in the eternal life, forever to inflict themselves with pain. Aristotle considered self-murder a crime against oneself and country. Jews denied a proper burial, and for your lifeblood, I will require a reckoning. There is no logic to divine, no pleasure or pain greater than human stain. A drawer of junk jewelry, combs and brushes, sweatshirts, made of honor dress, wrapped in cellophane and stored like shadows in the closet's hinterland, diary with crushed pressed flowers, drawn red hearts, confessions, hopes, dreams, ink bleeding on onion skin, thin as leaves, novels with pages flagged, postcard of Mexico I once sent, lock of hair sealed under glass, of the rashness, impassioned, forsaken, forever bemused, a life mask made of strips of paper mache, as if to mock the dead's eternal masquerade.
This is East End Inc. We heard poets Grace Shulman and Jill Bieloski reading their latest work at an online event which was produced by Canio's Books of Sag Harbor. The full recording can be heard at eastendinc.blogspot.com. Grace Shulman's collection, The Marble Bed, was published by Turtle Point Press in 2020. Ms. Shulman is the editor of Morning Songs, Poems of Sorrow and Beauty, published in 2019 by New Directions. Grace Shulman's earlier work includes the poetry collections Without a Claim, 2013, The Broken String, 2007, and a work of criticism, Marianne Moore, The Poetry of Engagement, 1986. Jill Bielowski's Asylum, A Personal Historical Natural Inquiry in 103 Lyric Sections, was published by Knopf in 2020. Her other work includes Poetry Will Save Your Life, a memoir from Atria Books in 2017, and History of a Suicide, My Sister's Unfinished Life, from Simon & Schuster in 2012. Upcoming literary events on the East End include, on Thursdays, January 14th and 28th, a book discussion of White Rage, The Unspoken Truth of Our Racial Divide, by Professor Carol Anderson, will be held in two sessions sponsored by Racial Justice East End. The book details white backlash in the United States and examines how structural racism has brought about white anger and resentment. More events can be found at caneos.wordpress.com. Just click on Calendar of Events. East End Inc. is heard on the 4th and occasional 5th Wednesdays at this time. Programs are archived at eastendinc.blogspot.com. And the podcast can be found at soundcloud.com. Simply search for East End Inc. East End Inc. is produced by Tony Ernst with the help of Marianne Calendrill and Catherine Sobel.